Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Michael W. Leach. He is a dad, husband, author, motivational speaker, and coach. As a coach, he specializes in mindset and mental endurance coaching for sports performance. He's also a storyteller, level 2 USA cycling coach, water lover, wilderness advocate, an amateur age group endurance athlete, and Spondy Warrior. Michael hosts the Bounce Forward podcast, which features conversations with endurance athletes and performers exploring how we bounce forward from injury, loss, and setbacks while diving deep into the psychology of the comeback. Michael has authored 3 books. His first book, Grizzlies on My Mind, explores his nearly decade-long journey as a ranger in Yellowstone National Park and fly fishing guide. Grizzlies on My Mind topped a bestseller list and received regional acclaim. Be Audacious, Inspiring Your Legacy and Living a Life That Matters, is a motivational book focusing on mental endurance, fortitude, and resilience. This was a Forward Indie Fab Book of the Year finalist. Michael is passionate about his 4-generation Western roots. He earned a BS in Environmental Studies from the University of Montana. Through his coaching, writing, speaking, and Be Audacious blog, Michael's mission is to help others become their strongest and truest selves. He lives with his wife, Amanda, daughter, Kamaya, and dog, Elvis, in Bozeman, Montana. Michael, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited for this episode.
I'm all smiles, Jill, and I gotta give you some love, first of all, because I don't know that anybody has pronounced my daughter's name like that correctly out of the gate, out of the jump. So that was beautiful. Thank you.
I like it. I didn't even ask in the green room. I remember reading this the other night, but there'll be a bit of wine involved. So
yeah, I'm really excited to be here. You know, I'm excited as a podcaster. I find listening to your episodes, you're thoughtful, you're articulate, you're such a gracious host. So I know I'm going to learn a lot here. And I just,
oh boy,
looking at your guest list, you have so many highly accomplished and distinguished people on your show. And so I definitely join you with humility today, and I hope we can add some value and make people think and perhaps pepper in some inspiration along the way for your listeners.
This is what I hope. And you're kind, but I don't actually do any of the work. It's all the Spondylitis Association. I just get to show up and do the fun part. So they deserve all the credit for the guest lists. But today we are going to talk about daily routines and rituals for mental endurance in managing this lovely disease, spondyloarthritis. Yeah. So I'm fascinated by all of your work. I've been hunting around, looking at your blogs and your website. Talk to me a little bit about, if we can start here, like your personal experience with spondyloarthritis before we get into all the amazing things you're doing.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I was, I'll try and keep the personal story short, but I was 19 years old when I was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis. You know, I was a pretty high level high school basketball player in the Seattle area. And, you know, we've got 4 generations of Wyoming history, a lot of University of Wyoming athletic background in our family. I was born in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, but spent my formative years in the suburbs of Seattle. And Seattle at the time in the 90s, it was, it still is very much, but it was one of the hotbeds for high school basketball in the country. Basketball was very much my identity, my passion. It's what I was pursuing. And I had some unfortunate injuries my junior and senior year. I ended up at a junior college. A lot of frustrations with that. And I was in a car accident, and the accident is what my rheumatologist believed triggered the spondylitis. I did not know anything about our family's history with AS, with ankylosing spondylitis. We'd spent a year, I was redshirting, like trying to get me back on the court. And, you know, I would have moments that were pretty prolific, where I looked pretty good, but the pounding, the wear and tear, really became hard on me. And so it would be, you know, a couple weeks on, a couple weeks off. And finally, a physical therapist, I can't remember if it was the Seattle Seahawks therapist or the Seattle Supersonics, maybe the Mariners. I mean, we were seeing everybody at the time. He looked at my spine and said it looked like it had a piece of like crowbar in it. And he asked me if I'd been tested for ankylosing spondylitis. And I remember going home and, you know, sharing that with my mom. And my mom kind of, I could see something in her eyes. You know, they had never shared that with me. And apparently my dad has AS, my uncle has AS, my grandmother has AS, and my dad had some real challenges with it in his late teens, early 20s as well, as did my uncle. And so that was the beginning. And at the time, the diagnosis, you know, it was scary. And I remember my first trip to the rheumatologist, Dr. Brown, brilliant rheumatologist in Seattle. And I remember sitting in the waiting room, and here I was, this athlete, felt like I had this rug ripped out from underneath me with this diagnosis. And I just remember, and bless her heart, you know, she clearly had a terrible case of spondylitis, and she was, you know, kind of bent over and really, really struggling. And I remember her looking at me and asking me what I was in the office for. And I said, well, I was just diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis. And she looked at me and said, this is what you have to look forward to. And I remember I went into the bathroom, like, and just, I mean, I just sobbed, and it was, I came home from that first appointment, and it kind of brought me to my knees. And so, it was quite a process. Actually experienced quite a bit of depression after the diagnosis. That's when I started seeking support from counseling. And so, yeah, it's been quite the journey. I had a great run in my 20s after that. However, I became a ranger in Yellowstone National Park, and, was able to adapt and pivot, and really, it was, you know, I had a great adventurous run, backcountry skiing, climbing, rock climbing, ice climbing, backpacking, a lot of biking, worked as a fly fishing guide for years. And so, yeah, my journey with spondylitis has very much ebbed and flowed. It's like, yeah. Think of it like waves and riding waves and being out on the river in the different seasons, if you will.
Yeah. It's, that's amazing. The story is, because you're like, you have such energy. So we're going to get into this. Okay. So I want to do like 10 episodes with you, but
hey, I'm all about the two-parter. The bounce forward, we've had so many two, three-hour conversations that we end up doing part one and part two, and often bring them. I mean, we've had people back 3-4 times, so I'm always happy to come
back. All right, so this idea of mental endurance, mm-hmm. incorporating into the daily routines. Talk to me about that. Why is A... I don't even know how to coach people, but you do, on mental fortitude that it takes to stay disciplined when you have a chronic illness and it is like riding a roller coaster most days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love your analogy there. I love to describe it as riding waves. So if you look at my blog, if you look at the podcast, if you look at some of the chapters in the book, you know, there's titles such as The Waves We Ride, or I love that wave riding analogy, that metaphor. And I think first and foremost, when I have the opportunity to work with somebody who's navigating a chronic illness or perhaps trying to bounce forward from injury. Today, I had a long conversation. I work as the mental endurance and mindset coach for our local high school football team. One of our studs is coming off of an injury and has been cleared to play, but there's a lot of mental challenges after tearing your ACL and coming back. So I was, you know, kind of coaching up the coaching staff on how to navigate that with the young man. And so a lot of my work is helping athletes bounce forward from injury, from illness, from setback, perhaps depression that accompanies that. And I think we start by just trying to embrace a really strong mindset, a growth mindset. And I think it's helping initially helping athletes, helping anybody who's dealing with a chronic illness to get into what we would call challenge state versus stress state. I think it's really easy to have negative thoughts and to let those thoughts metastasize and snowball and spiral, especially if we're initially being diagnosed with something, or perhaps you've had the diagnosis, but you're just experiencing your first flare. We all experience the spondy flare, if you will.
Can I double click on challenge?
Yeah. Jump in anytime. Yeah.
Can I double click on challenge state stress state? Yeah. This is intriguing.
Okay. Oh yeah. So stress state, you know, especially for performers, for athletes, I work with a lot of athletes, and I just drew this for my daughter today. There's a performance curve, kind of a curve for a pressure curve, if you will. One of the great endurance athletes, I think, in North America right now is a mountain biker, an off-road endurance rider by the name of Haley Hunter Smith. She's a Canadian. We've had her on the Bounce Forward podcast, and she will say that when pressure is managed optimally, it can be a superpower. And so there's this curve that we use, for instance, this episode. Okay, so getting to sit down with you here today, if I come in, this really matters to me, you know. And so I've prepared over the last couple of days. I certainly have prepared today. I would say the great antidote to pressure is preparation, is being prepared. And so we're trying to help athletes be prepared. And I think the more prepared they are, the more they can get into that challenge state versus the stress state. And so every athlete has a different level of pressure that they can navigate. But what we find is the external pressures that athletes or performers experience often aren't very beneficial. Those internal pressures, though, as Haley would say, can be a superpower, but it's going to be a different level of pressure for each athlete, if you will. And so typically, if we're in stress state, and stress state would be more of that place of fear and anxiety and trepidation, like we tend to not perform our best. When we can get into challenge state, and I would argue that people living with ankylosing spondylitis or other chronic illnesses are often can either be in stress state or challenge state every day.
And yeah.
I think one of the real most frustrating things about, let's say, our ankylosing spondylitis diagnosis is we don't have any choice there. This is something that's been thrusted upon us. But I think when we can recognize that we do have choices about how we go about our day, and when we choose to be in challenge state versus stress state, you know, it's real. I've got a lot going on today, and I could really sit and be stressed and overwhelmed and feel like, oh man, I've got to get on this Spondy podcast with Jill Miller. Oh, this is a lot to pile on. Or I can look at it as, okay, there's a lot going on today, and this is going to be challenging to weave this in, but this really matters to me. And this is an opportunity to do something that really speaks to my life's mission of inspiring people. And this is a great opportunity I have. And it may be challenging because she's going to come at me with some hard questions. And I feel like I've got the competence and the capability to show up and hopefully add value today. And so, yeah, it's a different way to look at things, you know, big performance, stress versus challenge. We tend to perform better when we're looking at something as a challenge versus something to avoid, if you will.
Yeah, I like this. And is routine one of the things that keeps us in making challenge state a little easier?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that routines can anchor our thoughts. I believe that routines can anchor our behaviors. And I believe that they can ultimately give meaning to our lives. And so I think, as somebody who's working with an athlete or you know, a person dealing with chronic illness, you know, the first step in any kind of sports psychology or sports performance strategy is always awareness. And so, you know, we've got to help them be aware of how they're thinking, And then we try and start to explore their ethos, their mission, their goals. Goals are one thing. I always say there's goals and there's attainable goals, but to me, it's ultimately it's about the mission. So it's helping them define and flesh out what their core values look like, what we would call their non-negotiables. And I think this becomes the arc from which they work through their day-to-day, their mission. And so I really believe that those routines, I often say that if we are what we repeatedly do, it would behoove us to be really thoughtful about our habits and our routines. And so I think, helping people to find routines that work for them and strengthen them. When we're dealing with chronic illness, I think there's often going to be some depression there, and perhaps a layer of cognitive dissonance is very common. And so I think the work always starts with building a relationship, building a genuine connection, letting them know that you genuinely care as their coach, and then to help them shift the mindset. And I think as far as routines go, that's a potent place to start. It's a potent place to start today, and can really, be impactful.
And I love that you touched on the values piece. So that I think is really core. I would certainly, I always give people the advice, if you don't know what your values are, because as I hire people, one of the first questions I ask is, what are your values? And if they don't know, I my question back is always, how do you know if you're going to like working here if you don't know if our values align? But even figuring that out for yourself is something that I think a lot of people have to go through. I know I went through some tough stuff and the disease and all that and everything. And there was a point I remember saying to my therapist, I don't even know what my values are. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and did them, and it was really crazy, right? And I'll be honest, prior to that, I was probably 44 when I did that, but I don't think I'd ever done it, really written them down and gone through it. But this is the beginning of routine, right? The values are the beginning of routine. And I remember looking at the paper and going, how am I going to order these now? And I remember not wanting to, but I put health at the top.
Okay.
Knowing that I have a chronic disease, right? Because, and I'm probably, I always say I'm 80% on that one, but.
Jill, do you mind me asking how many values were on that list? When you talk about kind of prioritizing them, do you remember how many?
Yeah, I do. So there were, the original list, I worked through a worksheet and got them down into a few buckets.
Okay.
I think it was pick 30 and then bucket those five. Bucket those 30 into five buckets. And so mine landed as health, faith, family, kindness, and curiosity. And I just...
I love that. All those are powerful. I love that last one, the curiosity. I think
it has been a transformative superpower for me, this whole, that whole exercise. And yeah, routine is... I need some mental fortitude help right now.
We all do. And living with this condition, just hearing you talk about you've been through some stuff. Often, the diagnosis in some ways is the easy part. I think when we start to experience, and everybody fully recognize and acknowledge that everybody's experience with ankylosing spondylitis is different. And any kind of rheumatoid, any kind of RA it can be different for each person. But I think we all know about that dreaded flare, and those flares can look different for everybody, what triggers them can certainly, there can be some commonalities, but they're also, it could be a flare that lasts days. I've experienced flares that have lasted years, And so I think, for me, as far as routines go, I try to take my medicine, as far as what we coach and what we teach, and as far as routines go, I think it really starts with setting your intention for the day. How do you want to show up? How do you want to be in the world. Not what you want to do for the day, not your checklist, but how do you want to be in the world? Hence the be audacious coaching, you know. And I think it starts with a choice. And I like starting with a choice because, again, so much of our life is out of our control. You know, some of our circumstances are what they are. And when it comes to AS, I don't think any of us would choose that. And yet when we recognize we get to choose how we show up for those, for our loved ones, how you show up for Jill Miller today, how we interpret our spondylitis. Yeah. You know, I like to say our personal story is all we truly have. So make it count and tell it well. And my mama, who's a beautiful woman who's written over 10 books, best-selling books. We just lost her in October. One of my dearest friends, such big loss. I remember during one of my darkest episodes with a spondylitis flare, I was on an off-label medication, which is often the case for people with spondylitis. They throw a lot at us. I wasn't tolerating the medications well, the biologics, the anti-inflammatories. This was early on. My doctor said I've never been a drinker. I've never, done any kind of drugs. My doctor always said that my blood was like spring water, and I just didn't tolerate the medications. And so they tried me on an off-label drug, and it was a antidepressant. And I had some reactions to it about a year into it. And so I went to get off of it and was experiencing this severe SSRI withdrawal. It was a pretty rugged experience at the time. And I remember my mom saying to me, it was a dark day. It was a dark period. It was dark months. And my mom said, "Mike, you're really struggling right now." She goes, "But people who haven't struggled bore me." And that has always stuck with me. You know, people who haven't struggled bore me. One thing about those of us living with AS is, you know, we're not boring. So we might as well get good at storytelling.
You know what? You're right. I mean, I love it.
People who haven't struggled bore me.
I love that.
Yeah.
Should be like
my mom's brilliant. I mean, my mom got into Stanford, you know, Washington State Veterinary School. She went to Gonzaga Law. She, you know, like I said, she has written she's an amazing novelist. Yeah. So when my mom speaks wisdom, it often, you know, strikes to the core and sticks.
I love that. And I am sorry to hear that you lost her.
Thank you.
That is not easy.
Big blow, big loss.
And
she was my greatest, I mean, my wife has become this, but my mom was my greatest champion when it came to AS. I mean, she just left no stone unturned. She would just research and get me to the right doctors. And it just was my greatest advocate, you know, and we all need that. Yeah,
we do. And then we get the torch passed to us.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Okay. I don't want to get sad here. These things affect me. Okay. So for you, what are your values? I showed you mine.
Oh man. So we have, this would be a deep dive. We have I would have my 10 core principles, if you will. We have our 11 values as a family, our 11 core values as a family. I mean, some of them, it all starts with love, you know, it always starts with love. I mean, you'll see my sign off is with nothing but love. Every book, every blog, everything I've ever posted, WNBL, you know, with nothing but love. And so as a family, I mean, my highest calling is being a dad, being a husband. I think providing my daughter with love, goodness, and stability, helping guide and coach her up through this often challenging world. That's my highest calling, my mission. And so, as a family, love is first and foremost. I think within our family, we really preach communication. We call it consummate communication. We try and really, really communicate, give each other grace, give each other the benefit of the doubt. apologize early and often, not hold on to things, be sincere in our apologies. And so, for a couple of our core values, love, family, nature, compassion, kindness, character, integrity. I love the eight C's in IFS. So I'll use some cognitive behavioral techniques in my coaching. I'm a big proponent of IFS, my counselor. I start every episode of my podcast asking a question that comes from my counselor, Dr. John Wimberly. And this is a great one. Dr. John Wimberly would say, one of my favorite Wimberlyisms is acceptance is allowing reality to be as it is without requiring it to be different. And I use a lot of IFS. He introduced me to IFS, internal family systems, and okay. Dick Schwartz, developed IFS. The movie, now I'm going to draw a blank. What's the movie that's out right now? Inside Out. That movie was essentially developed based off of IFS. That's what inspired the original movie was IFS. Really? And it's this idea that we have all these parts. These different parts, but they have the eight C's in IFS, and these would be things like, clarity, courage, compassion, curiosity, community. For me, it's things like, to be audacious is to be bold, courageous, uninhibited, unrestrained, without restriction of prior ideas. Highly inventive, lively. And so I think on a personal level, I would say on a family level, my mission is to provide love, goodness, and stability for my daughter and my wife. I think on a professional level, it's to be an inspirer of people. It's to inspire people, it's to buoy people up, it's to elevate people's game and to coach people up. And then on a personal level, I think it's really simple. I think it's similar to what most of our life missions would be. And that's just to try and be the best version of myself each and every day. You see it on the website. My pitch as a coach is helping you become your truest and strongest self. And I think if every day that to me is the core value of all core value is trying to be the best version of ourselves, trying to be our truest and strongest self each day. And I think we ultimately do that by just showing up giving what we've got. Yeah.
Okay. So we've totally blown the topic today, but I want to explore something else. So we'll have to do another episode on routines.
Okay. Oh no, I'm not. So, and another piece about the routines that I think is really important is the title of my TED talk is not just the power of routines and rituals. It's the healing power of rituals and routines. And so I do think for folks living with conditions like AS, I think they're even more important than just say your average Joe or performer who's just looking to elevate their game. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to pick a fork in the road. We're either going to talk more fun stuff. Okay. And I know, or we're going to go down the routines route.
We'll go wherever you want to go.
Okay. But because I love this idea you're talking about. I want to go into routines for a minute, but I love this idea you're talking about of being love.
Yes.
Right. This is a concept that has kept me going for many years now. I recently revisited it. It became a part of me. I was at an ashram up in Northern California years ago. And there was a talk on this idea of being love, not being in love, not being loved, just being love. But I see that in you, right? This is what you're describing. And there's healing in that.
Yes.
Right. And I find we all have bad days, so I'm not always great, but I actually I'm with you. I just made a note. I'm working on a book. I need a coach there. It's a disaster, but I just made a note to the person helping me with it. I was like, how do we bring this concept of being love into the boardroom? Because I think it would heal a lot of things, people, and it allows it's just a different concept I don't come across very often. So I'm like, that's why I got super excited. And I know I just took us totally in the weeds, but would you say like that's at the top of your values list?
Yes. Number. So of our 11, of our 11 core values as a family, the first is love, you know, first is love. And so as a family, I always say, you know, again, we have the giving each other grace, giving each other the benefit of the doubt when we're having a hard day. You know, it's communicating, it's apologizing, being sincere in that. But first and foremost, like we call our house the love palace. Like first and foremost, we love big on each other. And so my daughter will sign off WNBL to me, you know, like with nothing but love. And so, yeah, I really believe that I think what has allowed me to be most impactful as a coach, especially working with young people. When you're working with teenagers and high level athletes, the young athletes, like my podcast has some explicit language, so I have to watch myself here at times. They can read right through your stuff, you know, and I think they really know when something is authentic and true. And I'm always blown away by what you just shared, as far as your observation, how quickly the kids sense that, feel that, see that, like that. If I have a skill as a coach, I think it's being able to connect and build meaningful relationships, and doing so pretty quickly, you know, and that then allowing for the vulnerability that's necessary to have progress in this kind of work.
Yes. Right. I think there is a lot of fear around being vulnerable,
yes,
whether it's someone suffering from spondylitis or the vulnerability that goes with, like, I mean, people growing is a painful thing. Like, just growing as a human being is a painful. It's painful at times for all of us, right? Life is hard. And like you said, we get to choose it. We get to choose the hard some days. Okay, I'm feeling super guilty that we're not talking about routines.
One of my favorite phrases in our family that my daughter could have told you when she was 7 years old is, we win or we grow. We win or we learn. Meaning, you know, every day is not going to be a win. But we can perceive what others perceive to be a loss. In our house, we try to perceive as an opportunity to grow and learn. And as an endurance coach, when you're talking about cycling coaching, those painful days, those hard days are the days that with the proper recovery allow us to get stronger. And I think the same can be said for what you just described. Ultimately, to me, each day is an opportunity to show up and try and be a little better at being the best version of ourselves. And because life is hard, I think it's ultimately about trying to handle hard better, you know, and that's not going to look good every day. But if we can reflect and say, okay, you know what, that one wasn't a win today, but how can we learn and grow from it? Again, I think there's power in choice when we see this as, man, I get to be with Jill today on the Spondycast. I have this opportunity today. Like, I get this opportunity. I think it just shifts our mindset. And I think mindset, Carol Dweck, the great Stanford psychologist, has a great book called Mindset, where she discusses the difference between growth mindset and fixed mindset. And that has been, I mean, that was my parenting Bible and coaching Bible, like, over a decade ago, whenever that book came out, long before I think her work was became more mainstream. And so mindset is powerful. Mindset is very, I think it all starts there.
Yeah. There's I would call it like the original podcast from, this is probably from the 80s, but it's like an audio of someone talking, and it's called the Language of Winners and Losers.
Mm, yeah.
Or it's something, but it is I have to get up and go to the gym, or I get to get up and go to the gym, which is what I was struggling with this morning at 6:05.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, hey, all this stuff, I will say all the time, just as my counselor will say to my athletes, easy to say, hard to do. Like, a lot of these things are easy to conceptualize. It doesn't make them, I love, so Dr. Jerry Lynch, who's a sports psychologist, has written some great books, and he has this great, he will tell you, like, you do not become a champion. Like, I also coach high school basketball, work with the football team. We just won a state championship, AA state championship. What I tell these kids is, you know, you did not just become a champion. As Dr. Lynch would say, you choose to become, you don't become a champion, you choose to be a champion. And how you choose to be a champion is by how you show up each and every day. And when you can string those days together, day after day, week after week, month after month, season after season, you become a champion. So that's where you win. LeBron James did not become a champion the first time he won a championship in Miami, as the general public would say. That young man chose to be a champion when he was 16, 17 years old. I mean, by the work he was putting in, by how he showed up. Yeah, maybe when he was 13, 12. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really an interesting perspective on it. Okay, so all of this is good. I knew we'd come back to it. This is all landing on routine.
Okay.
Yeah. In many ways, right? Yeah. So talk to me about the healing power of routines.
I think they can be so potent. I mean, let me share. So as far as like the healing power of routines. So back in 2013, I was diagnosed with, I'd had hip surgery. So I did not win the genetic lottery, Jill. I mean, I have chronic migraine. I had two, what now they would call traumatic brain injuries when I was younger as an athlete. At the time, they just called them severe concussions.
Yeah.
And I've had chronic migraine my whole life. I've got poorly shaped hips. I've got ankylosing spondylitis. I've fought a lot of tendinopathies over the years. I've got a crazy, crazy rare clotting disorder. So in 2013, I talk about this. I share this story in my TED Talk and in the second book. So I'll just do so briefly. But in 2013, I went down to University of Utah for hip surgery and to fix one of the poorly shaped hips and a labrum tear. About 5 weeks later, I was riding home with a basketball team on a bus trip. And I had this, I was just cleared to start lifting again. So I'd been doing pull-ups and lifting a little heavier. And I had this pain in my rib cage, and this was right before Christmas of 2013. And so they call me the Christmas miracle at the hospital here in Bozeman, because I went into the hospital on Christmas Eve. I had this excruciating pain in my lung. I couldn't breathe. And I was diagnosed with an infarct. A part of my lung was dying. I had bilateral pulmonary embolisms, and I had a massive, massive DVT. And so I was probably 32 at the time. They don't think to put you on blood thinners after a surgery, but what they didn't know is I was later sent to the University of Utah, and that doctor says I'm probably one of about 78 people in all of the Pacific Northwest and Northern Rockies with this clotting disorder. And it makes me, you know, anywhere from 60 to 100 times more likely to clot. And so I'm on blood thinners. And I remember during that time, we call it my brush with eternity. And it was touch and go. I was in and out of consciousness for a week. And I remember one of the thoughts I had at that time was I had finished Grizzlies on My Mind, but I thought I hadn't written Be Audacious. And I remember in that moment saying to myself, if I get through this, because I had signed a contract, I'd gotten a book deal, and I thought, never I wrote Be Audacious. I said, if I get through this, I'm going to write that book. And so I was given, we got through it. We got through the crux of it. And that spring, my publisher gave me 6 months to write a 90,000 word book. And I would say largely because of the writing routine that I developed in 6 months, I, you know, banged out a 120,000 page book. We had to edit it down. It was too much. And then I followed that up with book number three that we're trying to find a home right now, Deep Roots, which was a book that was not under contract. It's a novel. Wrote that over the course of, you know, over 100,000 word book that we've edited down to about 90,000 words. Wrote that over about 15 months. And that was all because of this routine. And for me, that was extremely healing. I would say the most powerful and potent of routines for us is more of a ritual, and that's right. our Sundays, our Sunday mornings. I mean, ever since we came back from Hawaii, my daughter and I were living in Hawaii, where we went through a divorce there with her mom, and when we came back to Montana, on Sunday mornings we would listen to traditional Hawaiian music. And so every Sunday morning, I can have the worst migraine going, Jill. And on Sunday morning, I'm going to wake up. I'm going to show up. If I got to have the glasses on, sunglasses on, the lights off, hat on, we're going to have the traditional Hawaiian music on. And I'm going to make a great batch of gluten-free chocolate chip pancakes. And I'm telling you, there's medicine in that every Sunday. And it's something we can lean on. It's something that anchors us. It grounds us. I think it uplifts us. It buoys us up. And so, I think the routines, the rituals, the habits can be so profoundly powerful and potent in our professional life, in our family life, in our personal life.
I mean, I think they are. I mean, for me, I would 100% agree on the healing power piece, and it helps. Going back to our very first minute on this podcast today, it helps with the challenge.
Yes.
Right. It helps us put us in this challenge mindset. I know. Okay. So full disclosure, like we discussed where I'm at in my age, but earlier in the green room, but like all of a sudden you've got a chronic disease and then you've gained 20 pounds and you hit menopause and all these things. And I used to be like killing it in the gym, but then you get to a point where I'm like, oh man, I'm out of the routine and I don't feel like doing this. Mm-hmm. And for years, really what keeps me going is my ability to move, right? Yes. For, I think many of us and many of the people listening, and I've just started up like, okay, I'm going to commit to getting back in the routine where every day for 45 days, I'm going to get up, get out of bed. And every day I'm like, I don't want to do this. And then I'm like, you know what? You don't even have to. All you do is get yourself like up and get in the car and get to the gym. But it is, it's hard. It's hard to put this into us. And I know that for a lot of us, I would imagine you too, like things change every day. They're not the same. I on and off keep a hefty travel schedule. But for like the routine things that ground like your Sunday ritual, I have 4 songs I listen to every morning.
Yes.
Rain, shine, no matter what. But, and I listen to them because it's like, this is what I want to be putting in my head all day long. And I get out of the routine and then I'm like, I'm kind of cranky. I yelled at somebody today. No, you got to bring back, you know, you're just like, all these things you pour in. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's hard to always keep those routines, but how do you coach people when they like want to reset into routine?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying there is some pain in resetting the routine, whether it's personal, professional, and this is, I mean, even in personal life about communication and.
Yeah. Yeah. I think first things first, I would coach somebody up to think big and start small. So I think, you know, you're speaking, as you're talking about getting back into your workout routine, I think we misinterpret at times motivation and inspiration. Motivation ebbs and flows. So I'm going to be racing the Leadville 100 in August. If all goes well, I've got, you know, I was 28 days out as of Saturday. I just put in 3 big training rides here. I've got two more training rides this week, Thursday and Friday, and then I'll have rest days during Kamaya's state swim meet. And if I can get through that, then I just have 2 more weeks of big training and then a taper, and then I show up to Leadville. And the thing about an event like Leadville is I'm going to be out there 10 plus hours racing 104 miles. If I'm fortunate enough to show up to that start line with the opportunity to race, you're going to be out there for 10 plus hours racing 104 miles, climbing, you know, over 12,000 feet, and the racing starts at 10,200 feet. And the first thing to go, everybody shows up motivated, but the first thing to go is that motivation. And so like you can be motivated to make your kid pancakes every Sunday, but very few people, I don't miss a Sunday. Okay. And you know, in how many years of school? So my daughter's a sophomore right now. We've been tardy to school one time. in her 12 years of school, or it was 11 years of school one time. And it was when my chain broke on a bike. And it's not that I'm striving for perfection. I don't believe in that at all. I think perfection is a fool's errand. We like to say progress over perfection. And I think that a real important teaching point that I just gave my daughter today, she hears all the time, that I would share with anybody who's newly diagnosed with spondylitis is oftentimes setbacks are a part of the progress. So keep that in mind. But being respectful to her teachers, like being respectful, showing up, like for me, it seems like such a little thing not being late, but it's a part of how I'm demonstrating, one, to myself and to my daughter, how I'm showing up. And so showing up for her, I said, hey, like this, I'm showing you respect by getting you there. We're showing your teacher respect by getting you there. And it's not that, you know, the day the chain broke, like it is what it is. We ended our streak and so be it. We did our best to get there on time that day. But I think when it comes to, so for instance, Sundays, if I wake up with a migraine, I'm not motivated to make those pancakes. Like I'm inspired to make those pancakes because there's a difference between a goal and a mission. Like when you're when you have a goal of writing a book, like most people aren't going to finish that book. Okay. When you're on a mission to write a book, like I'll bet on the person who's on a mission any day of the week. If somebody comes to me and says, I want you to coach me up to get through the Leadville 100, the highest, hardest, baddest mountain bike race in North America. And they tell me, I have a goal. And the first thing they tell me is of a time. I want to go sub 9. I want to get the big belt buckle. I'm right away going to be worried about them. If they tell me like, look, here's why I want to do Leadville, and they have like some meaning behind it, like they're inspired, there's a mission behind it. So I think the more we can, like you, one of your core values is health. And the more you can align the getting to the gym with your mission, your ethos, your core value of health, I think oftentimes we unblend from those two. And we see this as about weight loss or about looking good or about these kind of external results versus something that's core to our mission. Core to our, as you would say, our ethos. And here's another thing I would say about routines that I think are really important is I think we have to be flexible in our routines. And my routines are seasonal. Like they change from season to season. When it's summertime in Montana, I'm out on that mountain bike as quick as I can be each and every day. But that's also going to depend on my daughter's swim schedule. My first priority isn't my fitness or my exercise. It's my daughter, and it's getting her to the pool. And then I go from there, you know? And so I think being flexible, you said it beautifully. No two mornings are the same, you know? And so I think we have to be flexible in our routines as well. And I'm a big proponent in fostering and developing routines that fit for us. For me with chronic migraine, the rhythm of my morning, I often have no control over because I often get my migraine in the middle of the night. And so I wake up with it, and that's going to really, I'm going to have to shift things there. So I think being adaptable is we place such an emphasis on the routines. And that was the only, I really tried to emphasize in the TED talk, let's also be flexible. We don't want to be too regimented in our routines.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think it's also, and by the way, health was not one of my values, like until after a diagnosis.
Yeah.
Right. That was,
it'll inspire that. Yeah,
it does. And somebody said to me yesterday, they said, well, what does your life look like in 10 years if you aren't committing to your health again? Yeah. And I was like, it does not look good. Looks way better if I'm actually doing something. But no, this whole routine thing is, you do have to be flexible, right? And it's, we have one that says, like a little sign, and it says, focus on the process, not the prize, too. Yes. Like, I think yes. Process absolutely. Is part of it, but I hear what you're saying, and my key takeaway is like, I get to instead of I have to.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a that in itself, that mental fortitude is where the power is, right? The healing power.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. The fitness or the weight loss or the getting the gym, I think the more we are attached to the results, like as a mental endurance coach, I'm trying to help athletes to loosen the grip on the results, if you will, to help them to loosen the grip on how much they allow their sport to be their identity. And I think the more we can, what we find is the athletes that are more process driven than they are results driven, not only tend to have better results, but they tend to be happier, healthier. They tend to have more longevity. And I love what you touch upon as far as the movement, because for me, I truly believe that there's been no, and everybody's different. And I realize my spondylitis is completely different than, you know, any of our listeners. It might look different, but I do think we can find inspiration in other people's story. And I don't believe there's been any single element that has been more important to my daily routine as far as how much it impacts my physical and my mental health than exercise, than movement. I think I've always said that exercise is the most powerful and potent antidepressant I know. And I say I'm the guru of go. And when I can't go, I get low. Like the bouts of depression that I've experienced in my life have all occurred since my spondylitis diagnosis, when there's been a flare or an injury. And there was a period where I spent 18 of 24 months in a walking boot cast or on crutches. And I still got into the pool every day. I trained, I put a pole buoy between my leg. I crutched to the edge of the pool, took off the boot cast, continued to move. But I think movement, exercise, strength training, swimming, like finding whatever resonates with you that's low impact. Perhaps, I mean, there's a lot of people out there. I've seen you've interviewed people who are doing ultra marathons, who are still running. Like, yeah,
there's a couple of them doing them right now.
Yeah, yeah. So I think finding what works for you. But when I had the opportunity to write my story for the Spondylitis Association of America's blog, their website. And I think I gave 4 points. And the first one I said was keep moving. I mean, I remember my rheumatologist told me when I was 19, the best lotion for those joints is motion. And when I see rheumatologists now, because I'm not on any biologics right now, I'm not on any medications for my spondylitis. And they look at me and they say, man, you have literally treated your AS with movement, with exercise, you know, with fitness. And again, I know other people's abilities or their, it might look a little different, but I will tell you this, I'm fully convinced. I spent so much time after my diagnosis and then when I had some bad flares in my 30s with these self-limiting beliefs that were often thrusted upon me by medical practitioners, whether it be doctors doing their best with what they had, you know, physical therapists who just were confused by how to help somebody navigating AS. And so then their opinions were put on me. And I embraced that and had these self-limiting beliefs. And what I've really come to appreciate about my AS is that I am so much more capable than I ever thought. And I think there's probably not anybody out there living with spondylitis who could not grow their bucket of self-efficacy. And who could not, with the proper support and coaching, be doing more, regardless of what that more looks like. I think, you know, when we get diagnosed with a condition like AS, it can rock us, you know, and it can rock our sense of identity and our sense of self, and it can shrink our bucket of self-efficacy. And I think that most of us, if with the right mindset and coaching, can make that bucket swell into a well of self-efficacy as far as what we're capable of achieving.
Yeah. I'm rarely speechless, but I am right now. That was beautiful. But I think it is that like bucket of self-efficacy. I love that. Okay. So we're nearing an hour. So I'm going to pause. Okay. You have to come back.
I would love to. Anytime. Yeah,
we definitely have to do this again. This has been amazing. Any final thoughts before we wrap?
Man, any final thoughts? You know, people often ask me, like, why mental endurance? Most of the people in this work call it mental performance coaching. One of my dreams is that one day I'm going to be so full as a coach working with spondy athletes. I would encourage Sean or somebody to go look up. I have a feeling I coined the phrase spondy warrior years ago. If we looked up some hashtags and went all the way back, I've been using it a long time. And one of my dreams would be through Be Audacious Coaching, it'd be to have to hire other spondy athletes, spondy warriors to continue coaching up people out there living with spondylitis. Because for me, I think just this condition we have necessitates endurance. It necessitates endurance. I love the book. There was a great book written about Ernest Shackleton, and he was an explorer who voyaged to Antarctica in 1914. And he said, through endurance, we conquer. And stamina is about maximizing our output, in a simple way to put it. And endurance is about maximizing the time we spend performing an activity. And I like to think of life as a sport, as a metaphor for life. And this activity, this life that we're living, you know, we want to endure. And so I think ultimately mental endurance is about fortitude. It's about resilience. It's about perseverance. It's about helping people develop a mindset that fosters and supports our ability to endure hard things, to celebrate the good days, you know, with gratitude, and to get through the hard days with grace. And I think my parting words to folks with AS would be to dig deep, to lean in, to stay true, and to just keep showing up. I love the podcast Hidden Brain, and I heard this great episode while I was riding yesterday. I think it was titled something to the degree of changing our mental maps. And there was a Jesuit priest who said, 99% of life is simply showing up. And I love the Charles Swindell quote that says something to the degree of life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. So our 10% might be our AS diagnosis. I think it's important for us to just recognize that, you know, our thoughts are powerful, but our thoughts are just thoughts. You know, we have all these thoughts, we have all these feelings, and I think that we get to decide whether we assign meaning to them, you know. Our thoughts can impact our beliefs, our sense of self, our words and our belief can inspire our actions, but ultimately it's our actions, it's our showing up, it's our character that defines how we're arriving, how we're showing up in the world. And so I would just say, dig deep, lean in, stay true, ride the waves, see if we can balance those waves out a little bit. And just keep showing up and doing what you can to try and be the best, the strongest, and truest version of yourself. And don't compare yourself to me or to anybody else out there with or without spondy. Like, it's your journey, it's your path. Be inspired by others. And I say in the TED Talk, my pain doesn't lessen yours, and your pain doesn't minimize mine. Like, don't compare. Just be, and just show up. Be audacious.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Michael W. Leach, this has been the best hour, maybe the summer. Thank you for this. This has been amazing and inspiring. We definitely want to have you back. But yeah, thank you. I mean, I've learned a lot. So I'm deeply grateful. And you and I offline are going to talk about all your Jesuit folks. I'm a big Zags fan.
It was Zags. My mom's like I said, she went to Gonzaga Law. Thank you for your words. I'm humbled. I'm honored. And it's just been such a pleasure to share these ideas with you, to share this time and space. Hopefully we've added some value and offered some inspiration. But I'll tell you, for me, this work is always about, I think part of showing up is this is an opportunity to connect with a beautiful human. And so my hope is that this is, yeah, just the start of a new relationship, a new connection, a new friendship. And yeah, I appreciate you for sharing this time and space and for showing up the way you clearly show up. I talk about the five elements: effort, energy, enthusiasm, passion, and intensity. And I think they all just kind of build off each other, but it's clear you bring a lot of energy and effort and enthusiasm to this project. And that's a beautiful thing. So we're all grateful for your efforts.
I'm grateful for being able to do this. So, okay, enough. I'm going to get verklempt, but yes, let's do it again soon. And we will wrap on that note. Thank you.
All right, Jill. Have a beautiful day.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.